Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Nick Talk. I'm your host, Nikki James, and today I have a really cool guest on the show. She is a divorce coach, but she's also a registered dietitian, and they directly correlate, and we're going to talk about how. So, Miss Jill Galata, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited. Oh my gosh. I called my mom and like all my girlfriends and I was like, okay, guys, I have this divorce coach on. Like, what do you want to ask her? So every single question I have is all about like my friends and family. Just
I love it. And I'm an open book, so I'm happy to just spill whatever you want.
Oh my gosh, I love it. All right. So, I mean, let's first start off by, you know, talking a little bit about you. So how'd you get into this line of work?
It's so interesting because I have been circling it for quite some time. So I became a registered dietitian, and that was a career change in itself. And I think the main driver to going back to school, because I used to work on Wall Street and was in finance. Mm. I live just outside New York City, so that felt like the path that you should take.
Right.
And when I was there, I just realized this is not for me. I'm not passionate about it. And prior to that, in college, I suffered with my own eating disorder. And I think having struggled with that perpetuated my interest in nutrition. So when I was looking to switch careers, I really came from a place of, what am I passionate about? What do I really want to do? Money aside, what would make me happy? And so because I had my own experience with an eating disorder, nutrition was forefront of my mind. And I just love helping people. And I know food and nutrition can be such a struggle for many people. So I went back to school, got my education in nutrition, became a registered dietitian, and I opened my own private practice. And so in that work, what I loved about it was the counseling piece. Every dietitian practices differently. And so, you know, I practice from a place of really digging into what's happening in your life and the emotions that are driving your behaviors. Mm-hmm. I really truly could care less about telling you to eat broccoli. Like, I don't care. If you're struggling with something in your life, me telling you to eat broccoli is not going to happen if we're not uncovering what's the barrier there. So that's the piece of it I loved. And as I was counseling more in my private practice, a lot of the stuff that was coming up that people were struggling with were relationship stuff, was going through divorce, which was struggling in their marriage. And I, too, am divorced. And when I was going through my divorce, I saw how much that impacted my health. I saw my eating disorder behaviors kick up tenfold. And so it was just really this aha moment of, I really need to be helping women navigate through divorce the healthiest, happiest way possible. So it was this eye-opening experience because I realized as a dietitian, I really don't care about what you eat. I care about why you're eating it. And so, you know, you tell people you're a dietitian and the first thing they're like, tell me what to eat. What diet should I be on? I'm like, I'm not passionate about that at all. Tell me what's happening in your life and I'll help you solve that. And that will impact your behaviors with food. So it just all kind of came together from my professional experience and my own personal experience. And now I absolutely love what I'm doing with helping women transition through divorce. And it's a really, I really practice from a place of empowering women to find themselves again.
What's your advice for people that they're looking for an escape, but they're not quite there yet?
I think, you know, 2020 has been such a crap year, but I think if we could reframe it and think like, this is an eye-opening year. There's a lot to be learned from this. And I think especially in your relationships, like here's your opportunity to take a good hard look or like, are you actually happy in this relationship and are you fulfilled? And it gives you this eye-opening realization or insight that you may have never had COVID not happened, right? Everybody goes about their routines and their lives separately. And then you kind of get into this autopilot in your marriage. And like, now this is the stop button to be like, hey, wait a second. Like, is this actually what you want? Or are you actually fulfilled in this and happy? So I think as hard as it has been, and you know, you see the uptick in divorce right now, it may actually be a blessing. So you can look at it that way. And I also, if you're feeling stuck or unsure, I always think about, think long-term. I think long-term is, people think so short-term, like it's going to mm-hmm. suck and I'm losing my marriage and how am I going to get through this? Mm-hmm. Right, sure, it will, but what does 10 years look like from now and 20 years? Do you really want to still be in this place that far down the road? So I would always say think long-term if you're feeling fearful or unsure or not knowing what to do. Can you actually live your life like this with this person for the next 10, 20, 30 years?
When you talk to people, do you find that like they're ruled by their emotion?
Oh, absolutely. It's everything. And they're ruled also by other people and what they're doing and their behavior. So they're so impacted by what somebody else is doing. And then that in turn affects them. So, you know, it's hard for, if this, I have a client of mine who I love dearly, and she's struggling in a relationship, and everything this person does or doesn't do greatly impacts her mm-hmm. and how she eats, or if she goes home and drinks 3 glasses of wine or a bottle of wine. And so I see that all the time, that other people's behaviors are so impacted by, like, I so felt and like totally impact other people. And I think it's hard when you're in a relationship or even married, that what someone else does has a huge impact on you. Yeah. It's hard to separate it. It's really hard to separate it.
So as a coach, do you think, like, have you seen your, like, kind of numbers or, like, people's need for you for a divorce coach? Have you seen that, like, grow because of COVID?
I've had so many people reach out to me and it's like, I'm going to need you soon because they're not quite there. Yeah, it's crazy. Yep, yep. And it's like, I'm here for you, but it's sad, you know? I had someone write me on Instagram, like, why are you celebrating marriages ending? I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, right. I don't wish divorce on anybody. Right. I want people to have successful marriages. You have to accept that it's over. And nobody gets married to get divorce, mm-hmm. but let's be real, divorce happens. It happens a lot. So why not have a space where you can support people and people can have the help that they need to get through one of the most challenging times? So I do unfortunately think that my services will be greatly needed in 2021, 2022 yeah. because of what's happening here. But you know, I also look at it in a positive perspective, like, good, get out of something that doesn't make you happy. Right. You don't need to stay in your marriage mm-hmm. because you're not supposed to get divorced. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of people feel like, well, I can't be the person that gets divorced. I just have to stay. Or you have to stay for your kids. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have to stay. Yeah. You don't have to choose to be unhappy if you're unhappy. Like, you can leave and create a life that you want.
Right. And then there's the other aspect, like, you know, you can leave, you can choose to do, you know, you can choose to go. But then there's also that piece where it's like the guy leaves and then you're stuck with like, oh, shit. Like, you know, I was happy, but he left.
But I also think like how, and this wasn't my situation, I chose to leave. But mm-hmm. I think if it gets to that point that you're in a marriage where the guy decides to leave, like, how happy could you have been? Like, mm-hmm. if he decides to leave you, like, was he invested in you, engaging in you? Like, were you fulfilled? Like, I can't imagine. And, like, I don't know it well. And I've had some clients that when they reflect back on the man leaving, they start mm-hmm. to see, like, well, there were things missing. And there were things I wasn't getting from him. And he wasn't always available to me, like, emotionally or physically. So mm-hmm. I think when they do leave, there's a reason for it. It's quite possible that it wasn't as a fulfilling marriage as you thought.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask, you know, what would your, you've dealt with this for, you know, 4 years, well, not dealt with it, but you've been coaching people for 4 years. So what would your advice be to some of the women out there that are struggling with, it wasn't their choice, and like they're trying to, you know, kind of like make sense of it?
I think it's really important to reflect. That's one of the first steps in the framework of my coaching program, is taking a realistic look at the marriage and mm-hmm. like really reflect like, what was happening there? If this person chose to leave, they weren't 100% fulfilled and happy. And, like, how could you be if you're with a partner that's not? So really reflecting on what was happening in the marriage that may have caused this person to leave. And if you still come to the consensus that everything was great and wonderful and you have no idea why he left, that's hard and it's heavy. But at some point, you're going to have to choose to accept that it's over and this person is deciding to move on. So you could either stay stuck and feeling hurt and sad and upset, or accept what's happening, as hard as that is, and start to rebuild your life. This person has chose to move on. You should create the same for yourself.
So when people contact you and they're looking for a relationship coach or a divorce coach and they're trying to get through it, what do you find is like the most common issue? Like, what are they looking for? Like, why do people call you?
I think there's a real sense of, and this is what I experienced when I was going through my divorce, like, just help me and tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. You are so lost when you get divorced because, one, you were attached to somebody and part of a couple in a unit. Now you're all on your own. And so that's like, who am I outside of a relationship, outside of a couple? Like, I don't even know who I am. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense of that loss. There's a sense of loss in, I thought this was going to be my life forever. So now what? I don't know what my life is going to look like. So that's a sense of really like feeling lost, having no idea how to like get back on your feet, no idea who you are, no idea how to even take a step forward. So there's like almost this paralyzing, like, just tell me what to do because I have no idea what end is up.
Right. When do you know, like, okay, this is normal, and then what's the cutoff of?
I think it's when you have thoughts of harming yourself. I think that's the time. I mean, I think everybody should have support regardless of the intense, like how intense the emotions are. But if you're literally not getting any help and it's getting to the point of you're thinking about harming yourself, that is like red flag. Like, get help.
Yeah. Do you deal with like a lot of that, or like do people ask you, do you have to go that route?
I've had some clients that have said, I would never do this, but I thought that. Like, I thought I would want to harm myself. And so we do talk about taking like a level of care, higher psychiatrist, maybe medication. Mm-hmm. They're also in the process of getting help. So I feel confident that they're not completely on their own having these thoughts because they are working with me. Sometimes other people have therapists in conjunction with working with me. But I think if you're 100% on your own and you're trying to navigate this yourself, like that would be a red flag where it's like, okay, I can't do this on my own anymore. I'm really struggling. Like, I need to reach out for some sort of help.
Right. So Jill, tell me a little bit about like your experience, because, you know, we talked about, you know, a little bit about how you got into it, but you really came from a place of like, you know what people are going through.
Oh, God, yeah. My marriage was awful. It's so funny as I look back because I've been separated for over 5 years now. The beginning of this month is my 5-year anniversary of being separated.
Yeah, I bet you're so happy.
I am. I'm like, I'm celebrating that. It's such a celebration at this point, which is a nice place to be. Mm-hmm. And I actually just posted about this on social media yesterday because I guess I had somebody DM me and say, you know, what is your story? Because I always talk about, I know what you're feeling, I know what you're going through. And I guess this woman brought to light that maybe I wasn't being as transparent about my own divorce story.
Okay.
So I posted about it yesterday, but I married, now realizing, a narcissist and master manipulator. Like, I swear to God, if he could make money off of manipulating people, he'd be a billionaire, and then maybe I'd get some child support. Yeah. And we shouldn't have got married. I mean, when he proposed to me, my initial reaction was, I don't want this. And the reason being is there are so many things that I started to see, especially around money and finances, that didn't really sit well with me, but I ignored them. I ignored those red flags. He presented as a really kind, caring, good person. So I thought to myself, he'll get better. He will do better at this. He'll try harder. So that's the story I told myself. And then obviously I'm a big believer that fundamentally people don't change, and he definitely didn't. And all the problems that we had prior to getting married only were exacerbated when we got married. I mean, lying all the time and around finances. I lived in this perpetual state of like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, who else was I going to get a call from that this bill wasn't paid? And who was going to be calling and saying this wasn't done or this wasn't? And it was just, I lived in this state of stress and anxiety for years, but also still, but he was great at manipulating me. So he's like, I'll get better. I'm so sorry. I'm trying. And he would do all that. And I would believe him because I didn't want to get divorced. I didn't want to be somebody that was divorced. And I wanted this family life. And at that point, you know, I had both of my sons and I didn't want to split them up. And my parents were still married. So I struggled with that decision for so long. But the lying just got so bad. He drained me of everything I had, and he just kept lying. He kept lying. He kept lying. Then he pretty much almost lost our house. And that was my final straw. And what I realized was staying is worse for my kids. But I struggled for years, and it didn't even become, it stopped becoming about being in love with him. It became about, I don't want to face this. I don't want to get divorced. I don't want to, be looked upon as the person that got divorced. Like facing that stigma was really hard for me. Starting, it felt like starting all over, and then I was going to be on my own. Like all of those fears that come with ending a marriage, like I faced those, and it kept me stuck in the marriage longer than I should have. And thankfully I finally like opened up to like, this needs to be done. And even when I left, I stayed really stuck for so long. Like I just said, I've been separated for over 5 years. I will only be legally divorced in February, 2 years. Because I just, I was hopeful that he was going to change. I was hopeful he was going to fight for us. I didn't want to not be married. I didn't want to have to go through this. I was so angry. I held on to such anger for so long. Like, how could you do this to us? How could you do this to me? Why couldn't you have been better? Why couldn't you have changed it? And so I stayed stuck in all these negative emotions for so long. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about what I am doing, because I don't want women to stay in that place. It was ugly. I was the worst version of myself. I was so unhealthy. I was so unhappy. I was so stressed out all the time. It was just such a bad time.
You know, you start questioning, you know, if you're pretty enough, and, you know, that self-esteem piece. I was reading on your website, you know, you really try to help women get their self-esteem back up.
Oh, absolutely. Because you're like, you just feel shit about yourself. Sorry to curse. You feel awful. You feel like not wanted. You feel like rejected.
Ugly.
Ugly. Terrible about yourself, not worthy. Like you're just in the dumps, and anything negative or bad you can think about yourself, you do, because you're like, how could I end up in this position? There must be something wrong with me that I'm here, and that this person, you start to feel like this person didn't want me. This person didn't want to try hard enough. Like this person couldn't change this behavior for me. What is it about me that he didn't want to step up and make this better? And being lied to by the person that's supposed to care for you and have your back is the worst feeling ever. There's so much disrespect to that. And there's so much, how do you look at me that you're okay lying to my face every day? So there's so much damage that's done along that way that really rebuilding your self-esteem is so big in this process.
Yeah, it really is. I used to tell, so I've got kids too, but I used to tell them, I have girls, two girls and a boy. I know you have two boys. We'll talk about that here in a second too. But I used to tell them, I'm like, listen, ladies, Beyonce got cheated on. So it's clearly not about who you are.
I love that you tell them that. That's amazing.
I'm like, don't even worry about it. Like if you're like the queen of the shit of everything.
she's the shit.
Yeah, she is totally the shit. Like, it's not her fault that her man cheated on her. And then, you know what? They decided to work it out, so that's fine. Like, that's them. And, you know,
How embarrassing for her, though.
So embarrassing. But you know what? Like, kudos to her. I mean, you know, I always wonder, and this is another question I had for you. I always wonder, when do you give up? Like, when do you, like, toss in the rag? Like, how do you know? And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with when they're going through divorce. They're like, because like you said, they're holding on.
I think that's a really hard place to get to. Like, it is so hard. And I remember struggling with that. Like, how when am I going to know? I wanted the crystal ball. I wanted somebody to say, this is it, it's done, and this is how it's going to unfold. Like, you struggle with, am I making the right decision? And when will I know enough is enough? Because isn't this bad enough? And it's like, no, it wasn't. And so it's like, I remember struggling with it. Like, when am I going to know, like, what I should do or when enough is enough? And it just, somehow it clicks. Somehow you have that moment where you're like, yep, I'm done. Like, you will know instinctively when it gets to that point. And that's what happened for me. I was like, this is done. And one of the biggest things that was helpful for me, and what started to come up for me and really was what perpetuated me finally realizing, like, this is done, was I just started feeling this weight of, I can't live like this for the rest of my life. Yeah. And I can't do this for another 2 years. And I'm supposed to do this for the rest of my life. This, the weight of the situation and the longevity of it, if I stayed in it, like, was awful. So it just, I think you just know, and you'll get there when you get there, and everybody's timing or whatever clicks for them is different, but you do instinctively know, like, this is it. Like, this is done. I'm a very big believer, given my experience, that people don't change.
Yeah.
They show you who they are. It's your choice whether you're going to listen or not. And so, you know, even with my ex, he showed me who he was. And it took me a very long time to wake up and be like, oh, this is who you are. And you're never changing. I really believe, and other people can believe differently, that fundamentally people don't change. They are who they are. They might change habits, they might change behaviors, but big character things, they are who they are. So if they're presenting and showing you who they are, you need to see that. So I try, especially personally, this is my personal, like, friend stuff, I try to be supportive, because I have been in situations with my marriage, with relationships afterwards, where I didn't see the writing on the wall for a while. And so I always want to be supportive and understand, like, I'm not emotionally invested in the way that you are, and you will get to the place that you should with this. But I'm also not going to sugarcoat it. I'm going to tell you how it is. But I tread lightly, and between being supportive but also being honest, like, he likely will not change, and you deserve better.
Right.
Professionally, I try to keep that opinion out, because I'm here to coach you and guide you and not tell you what to do. So I when people come to me, and I've had some people come to me on the fence where their partner is presenting with big character flaws and they're hoping and wishing and wanting them to change, I will give them tools and strategies to try to see if things can get better. Before it's now, let me support you to get out. Because I never want to encourage people to leave or tell them to leave, because I think that's a decision they have to come to on their own. My job is to support you and guide you and give you the tools you need to kind of come to those places yourself. I'll never be, and I think that's what people
get wrong.
They think I'm going to tell, because I'm divorced, I'm going to encourage you to get divorced.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to support you to be get to the place that makes you the happiest individually, whether that's still in your marriage or it's out of it. Yeah. That's what's important for me. It's like, I want you happy. I'm like all about women and women being empowered by each other and feeling happy and confident and independent. So if that means that version of you is in your marriage, awesome. If that means that version is divorced, awesome. Like, I just want you to be happy.
Right. It's about finding that happy place with, like, no matter what. Yeah. imagine you're female, you've been divorced maybe 3 times. Mm-hmm. And you're in a new relationship, and you're actually, okay, you're in a new marriage. So this is number four.
Number four, okay.
Number four. You know, would you be like, look at yourself?
Or what? What were you going to say?
Or does she just have like a bad picker-outer? I don't know.
Well, I think the bad picker-outer starts with you. There's a pattern that you're repeating that has to do very much with you and your history or your upbringing or, you know, your own story. Mm-hmm. Something is going on with you that you're repeating patterns and picking people that are not good for you.
Yeah. How would you say, like, what advice would you give to someone like that on how to, like, look inward?
I think therapy or coaching is huge. So if you're not in therapy or if you're not working with some sort of coach, it's going to be hard to do that sort of self-discovery on your own. Mm-hmm. You need somebody pushing you. You need somebody asking you the deeper questions. You need somebody really helping you examine your patterns, your behaviors, your thought processes. And that's not something you can do on your own. So I would definitely encourage this person, like, you need to start doing some work on yourself.
Right.
And really look inward. And I think you need support with that. This is not something you can do on your own. And I think it's really important to be intentional about that work, to be working with a therapist, with a coach. Maybe it's meditation also. Maybe it's journaling. Like, really being intentional, intensive about that work, because there's a clear pattern. If you're on marriage number four, something's going on. Something is going on.
Yeah. Yeah, one way or the other. Like, even if it's, like, if it's you and you have a bad picker-outer, and I hear that all the time. Like, oh, I just have a bad picker-outer. And then they're like, well, I'm dating someone completely different. And I'm like, well, you're not attracted to that person. Like, why would you go?
It's so funny because I think we go opposite because we're like, that's the problem. Yeah. Like, I'm picking the wrong person. So let me go completely opposite. Right. Even though I don't like this person, I'm not attracted to them. If I go opposite, it's going to work out. No, yeah. It starts with you. It starts with you.
They're like, yeah. Oh, I like the muscly ones. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to date someone that's a little chubby. Maybe I just need someone that has a secure financial stability. It's like, you know, no matter what you date, you're going to find someone wrong with them for certain people, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you don't do the work on you, no matter who you pick, it's probably not going to work out.
Okay. All right. So I mentioned earlier we were going to talk about kids. So I've got three. You have two. You got two boys. Yeah.
Yes. And they are on like a level 100 at all times.
How old are they?
7 and soon to be 6. So they're 19 months apart.
Wow.
Oh my God. They don't stop.
Oh my gosh. A bunch of Nerf guns. I see a lot of Nerf guns.
Yes.
A bunch of bullets everywhere.
You like nailed it. My son broke up out the Nerf gun yesterday, and I was in my bedroom trying to work, and I just hear the clicking of the Nerf gun. I was like, oh, he's got a Nerf gun again.
All right, you guys, if you want to get Jill a Christmas gift, get her the refills, okay? She's gonna need she needs the one with the suction cups, okay? So she can close the sliding glass door.
Oh, that's so funny.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so mine are a little older, but I wanted to talk about like how it affects kids because, you know, as moms, Jill, you and I, like, you know, we think about that. We're like, okay, well, and that might be a reason like not to get divorced because you're like, we got kids, you know. So how do you deal with that?
That was a huge hang up for me when I was deciding like what I was going to do about my marriage. And I know for a lot of my clients, that is too. That's the sticking point. It's like, for the kids, I have to stay for the kids. And I see this all the time. I have to stay for the kids. And I'll be honest, I did the same thing. I'm like, I was ready to coexist. Mm-hmm. I was like, I will stay in this house. I'll coexist with this person because I don't want to do this for my kids.
Yeah.
And what I've come to realize for myself and just in this profession is that is the worst thing that you could do. I have so many friends because as I was getting divorced, I was so inquisitive and I asked so many questions and a lot of grown adults that were kids of divorce or kids of parents that did not get divorced would always say to me, I wish my parents got divorced.
Really?
Or, yes. Or the people that the adults that their parents did get divorced, I'm so thankful they got divorced.
Wow.
It was so interesting to hear, because we have this idea that don't get divorced for the kids. And you hear these adults saying, I wish they did get divorced, or they're happy that they did get divorced. And I know what came for me. I have two little men. I'm trying to raise men. And I think we need more good men in this world, just saying.
Amen, sister.
I just remember what clicked for me is, it is worse if I stay because what I'm teaching these boys is not okay.
Yeah.
The behaviors that they will see from their father are not okay, and it is worse if I stay for them.
Mm.
And I really believe that if the marriage is not a healthy one, if the household is toxic, it is not okay to stay for the kids. It is, in fact, better to leave.
Yeah. You know, I myself was divorced, or am divorced. Mm-hmm. And I remember going on, you know, I was dating, and I would date someone that, like, maybe had a child. And I remember this person was, like, so standoffish with affection with me. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I told this person, I was like, you should teach your child that love is okay.
Mm.
You know, like, affection is good. And and then I reverted that back to, like, a loveless marriage. And you know, like you were saying, it becomes just, like, I call it, I tell my girlfriends, like, a business decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's it does not do the kids any good.
Absolutely not. And I remember thinking, because I was a real, and I am a tight ass about my kids and who I bring around them. And for a long time, mm-hmm. I didn't bring anybody around them. Mm-hmm. I didn't even let them hear me on the phone with another guy, because I'm like, until it's somebody significant, nobody's coming near my kids.
Right.
And I remember, you know, the one and only person I brought my kids around, I remember us, like, showing affection to each other in front of them. And I was like, it clicked to me. I'm like, they need to see this.
Yeah.
They should see two adults or whoever their parent with is mm-hmm. being affectionate and showing love. And I was like, they would have never saw this had I stayed in my marriage. And I think it's important for kids to see that.
Yeah. Your kids need to do the gross face, like, ew, mom, ew.
They handle it pretty well. They're too young, probably. I'm sure when they get older, they'll be like, get out of here with that.
I know. Oh, my
we
gosh.
We don't want to see that. Yeah, get out of here.
Get a room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you know what? There's so many different phases of divorce. So I have so many questions. I've actually never had the response to a guest that I've had with you. So I'm
love it.
I know, like, people are really excited. And I think it's because, you know, especially about, you know, the time, 2020, COVID, you're kind of, you know, you're stuck in a house with who you married.
Yeah.
You know? But one of the questions was, you know, so I have a friend who's actually going through divorce right now. And, there's kids involved, there's court, there's you know, the little stupid things that people don't really understand that you have to go through that take up your time and your energy. So her question was, if you have kids and you're going through court and you're doing, like, all this what do you call it, custody, like, battle, mm-hmm. how do you build a relationship with the father of your children properly?
This is such a great question. I just had a conversation about this today and did a post about it today, which I'm putting up tomorrow, about co-parenting. I think it's so hard. It's so hard. You have to take out all the emotion from the co-parenting, with the co-parent. Like, anything that you may feel anger about, animosity towards, disagreeing with certain behaviors, like, all of those negative emotions you feel towards that person, you have to remove when it comes to your kids. Almost like you said, it's a business deal. This is your business partner. Whatever you feel for them needs to be put aside when you're dealing with the kids. And I think when you can take that tension or contention or those feelings out of it, you start to build a different type of relationship where it's like, our priority are these kids, and that's where it stops. And that's what we have our conversations about. And you start to create a different type of relationship when you take those emotions out. It's really hard.
Yeah.
But it's really the way to start to formulate a civil relationship with right. them. When it becomes matter of fact.
Yeah.
And you can just address what needs to be addressed and make decisions for the kids without any emotion behind it. Because listen, I have so much negative emotion towards my ex, and I have thankfully come to a much better place with it. But I had to not respond with emotion. Like, right. I can't tell you the growth, and there's like an amazing meme about this, like the growth in reading a text from him and just responding, okay, where it used to be like a battle, right? There's right. so much between the two of you because of the relationship and the divorce and how it's unwinding and what's going on with court. If you could remove all that and just focus on what's the best for the kids, it starts to change the dynamic of that. And then there's no, you don't bring your own stuff into what you need to decide for the kids.
Right. What would you say if you're in the middle of a divorce and there's custody battles going on and you're like, yes, I'm going to take emotion out of it, but the guy, your ex, or maybe vice versa, what if they are just not as adult as you?
Well, that's my life, and that's what I live. I have a non-functioning adult on the other end.
How do you deal with that, Jill?
It's really challenging, and you get to a place where it's like you have to – there's a lot of acceptance. You have to accept that this is the reality. You have to – you have to accept who you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You have to accept that you can expect nothing from them.
Right.
You have to accept that you can expect them to not be an adult, and that's so hard because you're like, are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
Like, how are you behaving this way? Right. How are you not doing your part? How are you such a non-functioning
adult?
Do you not
see?
Yeah, it's like, do you really think you have to do nothing for these kids, or you don't have to pay child support, or you don't have to know where they are and what's going on? Like, my ex functions as if he's a single person, literally. And for so long, I would get so angry, and I couldn't wrap my head around it, and I would get angry at him. And it's like, this is who he is, Jill.
Right.
So until you accept that there's literally nothing he's going to do.
How did you do that, Jill? How did you accept it? Like, how did you stop getting angry at him? Like,
because I realized the only person it was hurting was me. And in turn, hurting my kids. Because I think what happens is we spend so much energy and emotion on being angry at them and expecting them to be different that it's draining on us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're not showing up in the best capacity for our kids because we're so angry. We're drained. We're not taking care of ourselves. I really start to realize, like, okay, this is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
If I continue to focus on him and what he's not doing and stay in this state of being really angry, the only person I'm hurting is myself. Because the angrier I get doesn't mean he's going to change. I'm only getting angrier and I'm getting more upset. So when you can realize that the only person that you're hurting is you, and by effect impacting your children, and you can just accept that I'll never understand it. I'll never agree with it. I don't agree with you being a non-functioning adult and not showing up for your kids. Yeah. But I'll stop getting angry about it because it's only impacting me. So for your friend, she has to really work to, like, know that's who he is.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be a good co-parent. And what I can control, you have to focus on what you can control. And what I can control is taking care of me and making sure I'm healthy and in a good place to be able to take care of my kids. And if I'm going to be the only parent that shows up for them, I better be in a good fucking place to do that.
That's right. Yes. Because you react to people, don't you? Like,
oh my God, I was so reactive.
Yeah. You really have to stop, like, reacting and just always remember. It's almost like there's like a you almost have to, like, come back to, like, your center chest and be like, okay,
yeah,
I am who I am no matter of who, you know, you're making me. But for women, it's really hard because we're emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. And we react when we react with intense emotion. I mean, there was times for me in this process of getting to this place of being like, all right, that's who he is, where I would literally have to stop and, like, count to 10. I would get a text from him and I wanted to like shoot off another nasty message and fight back and like, and I'd be like, Jill, mm-hmm. and I would count to 10 and take a deep breath. And really even just that act was so impactful mm-hmm. because guess what? They're not changing. So you got to realize like you're only hurting yourself by, and sometimes, and this is the fucked up thing, I think people that are like this, and my ex is this way too, they don't care about the kids enough. So mm-hmm. anything they're doing is to get at you.
Yeah.
They're not coming from a place of putting these kids first. They're not coming from a place where their motivation is to make the kids the priority. They're acting out in a way to get at you. And mm-hmm. when you can also recognize that, it's like, you're disgusting, and I'm going to focus on these kids.
As you were talking there, I couldn't help but go back to, you know, some of the men in my life. It's not all encompassing. Like, we're not saying, like, we hate guys.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
But you can recognize a specific type of man, just like a man can recognize a specific type of female.
I think that's so true, and I love that you say that. Like, mm-hmm. people are too sensitive. Like, we're not generalizing. We're just our own observations and experiences. This is how we formed our opinion. We're not making a blanket statement, but from what we've been exposed to, this is how we feel. And I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm. It is. I know so many times, like, people are like, okay, well, if you're pro-woman, you're anti-men.
No.
It's like, really? Because I had kids for a reason. Like, you know, it's so silly that people go to that extreme.
Oh, it's crazy. Oh my gosh. It's crazy making, too. There's no need for that
extreme. I know.
Everybody's so sensitive.
And that's what I loved about you. That's why I wanted to have you on the show. Because I read through your content, and I was so excited to have you on, because I think, like, you do such a fantastic job, Jill, of like telling your story and encouraging women without, like, you don't bash anyone. Like, you're so positive, and I think that's, like, you have to stay positive when you go through such, you know, like, a hard time like this.
Thank you, and I appreciate you saying that. I am positive now, and I want to be honest, I wasn't for a very long time, and I think mm-hmm. that's why I'm so incredibly grateful for everything that I've gone through and where mm-hmm. I've gotten to, and so happy to be able to help women to get to this place, because I wasn't positive for a very long time. I was hurt. I was angry. I was pissed. I was, woe is me, and how could you do this to me, and pointing fingers, and to then be able to make this shift and see this in a positive light and be positive and not...
When did that shift happen for you, Jill? Do you know? Was there like a definitive moment?
I love everybody asks me this question. I think it's such a great question. I would say, so I've been separated just over 5 years, and I'll be legally divorced 2 in February. And mm-hmm. I think it probably was within the last 2 years, so pretty recently, where I was able to be like, I'm sick of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of being this like awful, angry, stressed out version of myself. I'm sick of all of my energy going to being hurt and being upset and being pissed at my ex. I literally got sick of myself and was just like, enough. And I was mm-hmm. able to, and that wasn't like I said enough is enough and I'm sick of myself and now I'm all positive. But that was the turning point to be like, okay, your energy needs to shift mm-hmm. to rebuilding you and getting yourself to a good place. And so then I took the next couple years to really work on me and work mm-hmm. on shifting my anger.
Proactive, didn't you?
Proactive. Yeah, I became proactive.
And, what did you do?
I started journaling a lot. I think journaling is so impactful. I've actually created my own journal format that I... were used with my clients. So I started journaling a lot. I started, I did some therapy, and then I started investing in myself and I started building this business. And I think this is really therapeutic for me to build this business. Cause mm-hmm. and then I started working with other women, and that felt empowering to me. So I really started pouring into myself in all different avenues, business, personally, professionally. And that just really started to boost my confidence, that gave me places and spaces to pour all my energy into. And then mm-hmm. as I did that, it just opened up this amazing life for me. And I saw, like, this is good. I am happy, and mm-hmm. I made the right decision. And this person is not going to take that energy from me anymore. And you have this amazing life to live and you're in control of it.
Yeah. My minor is in psychology, and I used to tell people,
I love that.
I used to tell people, I'm like, if you want people to smile at you, smile at them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, they would try it. I would literally say, I dare you, go look at someone. If you're in a car and you make eye contact with the next driver, I'm in LA, so you're constantly,
lots of traffic.
You're constantly give them a smile. I said, I dare you. Like, I will guarantee, I can almost like lay my life on it, they'll smile back at you.
I'm going to do that today when I'm driving. Yay. And think of you. I had a mindset coach say this to me, and it's always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. You get what you give.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have gotten to a place where I want to live peacefully, joyfully, happy. And I think when you pour that out, even to people you feel like don't deserve it, mm-hmm. it comes back to you. And you live in more of a peaceful place. So even with my ex, who still to this day, I don't agree with any of his behaviors. And if I allowed myself to stay in that negative space, I could, because he has not changed. But even with him, I'm like, I want to approach him with lightness and kindness and happiness, because that's what I want to get back from the universe.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll continue to show, regardless of how he behaves. And it's a really nice place to be. We control us. So the second you allow somebody to do that, you're giving them your power. And it's like, you're in control of how you feel, how you act, what you say, what you think. And don't give that to anybody else.
I think you already went over this, but I just answer this bluntly. How do you know when to reach out?
It's so interesting, because as you were talking, I was going to say and bring it back to that, because I know you kind of asked that before.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're in the space, right, you put the blinders on and all you can see is negative and hurt and anger, and you're in this like very toxic place. And I think we're all aware of like when we're not in a good space, ask for help, because it's hard to get those blinders off by yourself. You'll stay stuck in your own shit if you don't look outward for somebody to give you a different perspective. To have somebody help you see it in a different light, to have somebody help you reframe it. So I think, you know, asking for help to me is a sign of strength.
So many people think that like going to counseling is weakness, and they're like, oh, like crying at a movie. They're like, nope, it's weak.
Why? It's so dumb. Like, so showing emotion and vulnerability to me is so strong.
It's so strong.
There's so much to be gained for reaching out and asking for help. Like, you will stay stuck. Those blinders will stay on, because it'll be really hard for you without help to see it in a different way, to be able to change your perspective, to be able to take those blinders off.
What does that look like in correlation to relationships? Like, how does that fit?
I think it ties into, and we talked about the self-esteem piece, any sort of disordered eating really comes from, a lot of them, from lack of control. So especially in this space where you're going through divorce, everything feels so out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking for something to hang on to. You're looking for something that you can control. Mm-hmm. And eating becomes one of the easiest things, like control what you're having. And I think there's also a component of that is, if I change the way I look or how I feel about myself, the external or all the shit that's happening in my life will be better. So if I'm skinnier, I feel more confident, and that's where I'll find my self-esteem. So we try to like change our external, like our bodies, to fix all of the other shit that's happening instead of really facing it. And sometimes that's hard. It's scary to face these heavy emotions and have to work through them. Mm-hmm. So we put our energy on something else we could fix or change or make different that we think is going to make us feel better. So if I'm 10 pounds lighter, my life will look better. No, it fucking won't. If you're not dealing with like the heavy, hard shit that's really happening, your body being different is not going to change anything. But I think there's this incessant need to control and change your circumstances, but you're changing it in a way that's not really impactful or long term.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think people get confused with, you know, when I look good, I feel good. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. When you look good, you know, you feel good. Put on some lipstick.
But that's not the only, like if I feel good, if I look good, but you have to do the other work too. You yep. can't only be changing that. So I'm all for, listen, I think every woman should feel good in their body, mm-hmm. but that's got to come along with doing the internal work too.
Yeah.
Because I think I've had worked with so many clients where they lose the weight they want to lose mm-hmm. and they're taking the pictures and they feel themselves in their outfits and then you look at their facial expressions and they're fucking miserable.
Oh, yeah.
So nothing they've changed externally has changed the other things that are happening internally. Mm-hmm. So hell yeah, I'm all about you feeling good in your body, but make sure you're also connecting to that with how you feel about yourself yeah. internally.
So, you know what? People don't often talk about that because they think, you know, again, with that whole, like, if you cry at a movie, you're weak. You know, if you say something, like, people don't want to show their weaknesses. And so they don't talk about the things that they struggle with. So it's like a silent killer is what I call it.
I agree, and I think it does a disservice to other people. I think it's so important for other people that are struggling to not feel alone. And mm-hmm. So for me, it was hard at first to share my story, especially my work as a dietitian. I'm like, who am I as a dietitian to have struggled with an eating disorder? Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, as soon as I became transparent about that, I mm-hmm. connected with my clients so much more. Wow. Because they trusted me more. They when I said I got it, they knew I got it because I know what they're thinking. I know what they're mm-hmm. feeling. I know what they're struggling with. So it's like, I think what you struggle with really is important to share. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to share because you might help somebody else and impact them. And I remember reading this really great quote. It's like, be open to share your struggle because your story might be the one that saves somebody else. Mm. So I think there's like a...
Was it scary for you when you first like told your story?
Yeah, definitely, because I think you worry about being judged. But then mm-hmm. you put that aside and it's like, if I could help one person by mm-hmm. sharing my story, I don't give a fuck who judges me. Go ahead.
Right.
Like,
right.
you know, I
they're going to judge you anyway.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to judge you anyway. So, yeah. So what? And... You know, I never want to come from this place of being preachy or I'm ahead of you or I'm better than you because I'm here. Like, no, I'm you. I've been you. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm a couple steps ahead of you, but like, here I am. This is raw. This is real. Mm-hmm. My life was in the shitter at one point too, and I want to give you hope. Yeah. I want to give you hope that it's going to get better and it can get better.
So what do you think? What do you think the correlation to religion and marriage is? Because I've got people also, I've got Jehovah Witnesses that asked a Jehovah Witness question. I got Catholic questions. I got Christian questions.
Oh my God. Well, oh, I'm man. Just going to be honest. I'm not a super religious person. Yeah. I was baptized, so mm-hmm. I relate with being Catholic, but mm-hmm. I'm not a hugely religious person. I don't mm-hmm. go to church. I haven't decided. I mean, my kids and I go to church on Christmas Eve, but that's mm-hmm. about it. And whether they want to decide to become more involved in the church, I think I may leave that up to them. Mm-hmm. I think you have to find somebody that's on the same page as you. If religion is important to you, then you have to find somebody that respects that or can at least understand it for you.
Right. Have you ever dealt with someone who's really religious?
I personally have not, and with my clients, and maybe because it's, you know, I think you attract like the clients that you want to work with or you mm-hmm. kind of connect with. And so I'm not a super religious person. So even as you're saying those things, which I'm aware of and mm-hmm. how you, with the Catholic Church is like, you're in control of you. Like right. who is some church of state to say like, if he didn't cheat on you, it's not good enough to leave. Like you're in control of your life. Mm-hmm. You're the person that controls what you want to do with your life. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. And if you're, you get to decide. I don't think anybody else should have that power over you. So it's hard for me to answer these questions because if I'm being really transparent and honest, I'm not a super religious person. So it's hard for me to wrap my head around. And I totally respect everybody's beliefs.
Right.
I think when we stay attached to these rules, we start to make decisions that are not in line with our own happiness mm-hmm. and fulfillment. And I remember like, not even from a religious perspective, but I remember being like, I can't get divorced. I shouldn't be getting divorced. Like, I felt like that was a rule that I was instilling in myself because my parents were still married. And mm-hmm. what are people and my friends and family going to think in society that I'm getting divorced? It's such a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And that was like so misaligned with like my own happiness and what I wanted for myself. So you are your own person. you make your own rules. Whatever you decide, that's up to you, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the work I do with the women that I work with is, like, what are you really letting go of? Because right. we recreate this, like, fantasy and what it should have been and who, what we could have had and the life that we wanted. Was it really what you had, though? Like, be real about what it was. Because what you're letting go of is not this fantasy that you created. You're letting go of a marriage that probably, if you're at this point, was not a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we create this, like, fantasy.
Yeah. How much happier are you now?
Ugh, forget it. So much happier, so much happier. And it feels so good to say that. It feels so good to say that because there was a point where I felt like my life was over. I am so much fucking happier. I was talking to another girlfriend of mine that is also divorced and mm-hmm. we were on the phone and it was like a random Tuesday morning. I just dropped my kids at school. I was driving over to this trail by my house that I love to run and I'm mm-hmm. on the phone with her and we're both like, I'm just so happy. I love my life. I love my life.
I love it.
Yeah, it's so good. And I was just at another friend of mine who's also divorced. I'm like friends with a lot of divorced women because mm-hmm. I think they're just badasses. But we were out in Newport, Rhode Island. We were at a vineyard and we're sitting having a glass of wine together. And we look over at like this family and they could have been really happy, but the woman looked miserable. And we looked at each other and I my immediate reaction was like, I'm so glad that's not my life.
God, I know. Oh, and it's so funny because when you are in it and you're miserable, when it's you and you're in the thick of it, you're just like,
yeah,
you feel like no one else can see you. But then like the minute that you make that decision, you change your mentality, you start to live for yourself. You look back on it and you're like, oh my God.
Oh my
like, God, so funny.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, I'm so much happier. And there's an amazing life to be lived after divorce.
I know. And the kiddos are happy, right,
Joel? Oh, they're so good. I have good little men. They drive me nuts, as little boys should. But yeah, they're good. They're really good. Aww. And it's all they really know. My kids were so young when I left. So it's what they know.
And we talked about this like briefly for a second, but like, you know, when you get divorced, you worry about, you know, you're coming from a dual income to a single income. And like, you know, you're going to have the kids and he's not going to have the kids. And, you know, you don't know if you're going to get any money out of them or not. And like, there's so many different questions, but at the end of the day, it's like your mental health, right? Oh,
God. And all of those things that you fear, you can change. I had a woman that was like, I was able to, I didn't have to worry about finances and I could get up and go to the gym and I could do this. And I'm like, but you can recreate that for yourself. You could start a business where you can go to the gym at 11 a.m. Like your options are endless. You just have to really shift your focus into rebuilding.
Yeah.
I'm a single mom, legitimately a single mom. I do not get a penny from my ex at all. And my kids go for nothing. They go without anything. Like, they're not spoiled, but they play the soccer, the football. They have this shit that they need. And I'm doing it on my own. And some days I'm like, how did I do this? But you do it. When you pour your energy into the right things, you make it happen.
And it feels good and it's empowering.
Yeah.
It's empowering to do it on your own. And, like, you figure it out. I'm a big believer in, like, you will figure it out. You are capable and it will work out.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So good. I have a billion other questions, but I don't think we'll be able to get to them today.
Well, we could do this again.
Oh my gosh. So Jill, I want to have you on for a part two.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay? I'd love to.
Yeah, because I am getting like, even as I'm talking to you right now, and they know I'm, my friends and family know I'm talking to you. They're like, ask her this, ask her that, ask her this.
Yeah, part two for sure.
Yeah. What's your message, Jill? What do you want to tell people?
That your life is not over if you get divorced and you are 100% capable of building a life that you absolutely love after divorce.
Some people like don't have girlfriends, but I'm totally just going to put on all of my social media. If you want a girlfriend, just to chat to.
Oh my God. That's honestly, when I think about working with women, I'm like, I want them to know that I'm their friend and I'm in their corner. Like really, that's the support I want to give.
I'm welcome for people to DM me on, I'm on Instagram at jill.galata, and I'm open to talking to anybody. Reach out and let me know how I can support you.
All right, guys, that is it for me, Nikki James and Jill Galata. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.